Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
We got a little bit of wintry weather moving in. The birds must be so confused. It's a little warm one day, freezing the next day.
Get in line. We're all confused. But that's how it's been. I mean, you know, we get these kind of warm spells, but then winter reality comes in. I don't know. We're going to get another lobe of the triple polar vortex or whatever, you know. We always get our cold spells, but it just seems like there are more warm spells.
Yeah.
And it's confusing. It's been confusing for plants. You know, we hope it's confusing for things like ticks, but the ticks are doing just fine.
Yeah,
I had one.
Course.
I had a couple of deer ticks on me the other day after walking in the woods in Harwich. But yeah, I'm sure it's confusing for them, but they can, you know, they're used to cold spells. I mean, that's normal, right?
Yeah.
That should be normal.
And probably this afternoon, if you're able to be at home with your bird feeders, it seems just before a storm, the bird feeders just kind of go crazy. It's like the birds know. It must be a, I don't know.
Yeah, whether they're responding to the low pressure, or they just know. But you're right. I mean, you do see that uptick in activity, and a lot of people have been complaining about not much bird activity at their feeders, probably because it, you know, there hasn't been a lot of snow, a lot of weather, a lot of storms to you know, tax their resources. So they seem to be doing okay. Like I know, there are bluebirds and pine warblers in my neighborhood, but I don't see them all that often. They're not like desperate to come eat my suet or whatever. They're just kind of around. But once you start getting snow on the ground, and you know, more storms and things like that, then I think people will see more bird activity at their feeders.
Yeah. A little later this morning, we're going to talk about an interesting article about bird feeding. Why do we feed the birds? And should we? We'll talk about that a little bit later on. 866-999-4626 is our number, though, for your bird questions, comments, or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So despite the wintry mix we're expecting today, there are signs of spring. Ducks are beginning their mating displays. Right?
Yes. Ducks are feeling it.
They're like, come on, spring.
they know it's almost Valentine's Day. Well, it really is. Oh, 2 days away.
Yeah.
So I've been noticing some of the ducks, particularly the Bucephala ducks. So like Goldeneye and some buffleheads I saw displaying the other day. And Goldeneye are fun to watch. You can usually find them on kind of bigger local ponds and salt ponds and bays and things. And they do this funny head tossing thing. First of all, the males are just beautiful. I mean, they're just, you know, crisp and beautiful plumage ducks with that kind of shiny green head. You know, it looks black at a distance, but it's a shiny iridescent green and white spot in front of the bill and just crisp kind of white and dark on the back. And then they start doing this head tossing display where their head goes all the way back and touches the back, and then they shoot it back up again, and it's all to impress the females. So that's kind of a fun thing to watch on local ponds these days. And ducks, they pair up very, very early, so they may not be mating for months. But
they're courtship.
They're laying the groundwork, right? Yeah. Right. There's a lot of lead up. It's a long courtship process, and they want to make sure they're paired up before they head north. Some of these ducks. So yeah, that's something that can get you through the cold days of winter, just knowing that the ducks are thinking about spring.
Okay, and what we're saying, well, spring is a little bit off yet. I guess we'll really know when the woodcocks start displaying. That's really when we know spring is around the corner.
Boy, that's, and even that, the lines have blurred there, too. You know, I often talk about how the old robins of spring myth, I mean, there are more, as many robins in the winter as there are in the summer here on the Cape. But woodcocks is sort of that way, too. There are some that stay here all winter, and I've had them displaying in the middle of winter in certain places. But yeah, it doesn't begin in earnest until March.
March, right.
But I've had my first definite displaying woodcocks of the year often in the kind of waning days of February. So they're tough. I mean, that's a hardy bird. And those are males. those are ambitious males, right? They don't want to miss out on any females. So the females are like, aren't even here yet probably. And these guys are just warming up
practicing.
And they're like, yeah, I'm just going to start now.
you don't know when that female woodcock's going to go, you know, prancing on by, right?
Right. And then, bird song, we've got a call.
No.
No, we don't have a call.
No. He's typing me a note. You go ahead.
I'm not gonna, I won't look at the screen. I'm getting distracted. Is this live? What's going on here? So the other thing happening is birdsong is definitely increasing. And I'm sure people are noticing this. We've certainly talked about this before. This is the other thing. If you don't want to go out to a pond and watch, Randy ducks, just listen to the bird song in your neighborhood. And so they're responding to day length. We know that the days have been getting ever so slightly longer every day, and the birds know that too. And it affects their hormones, and all of a sudden the song activity increases. So I don't know what other people are hearing. Are you hearing any?
Yeah,
it's
kind of nice to say, it's so quiet, and then all of a sudden you start to hear a little bit. You go, oh my goodness, they're out there. They're birds. And it kind of gets, increases as we go on.
Right.
And we had somebody call from Nantucket that say he heard a cardinal's spring song this morning.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about. And so the cardinal is probably the main one, but also song sparrows and Carolina wrens, all three of those in my yard have all been increasing their singing all of a sudden. And it's daily. It's a 25-degree day or whatever, and the cardinals are just singing away. There we go.
Yes. I just love it when that starts to get louder and louder in the morning.
Oh, it's a great song.
It sure is.
Right. It's a sign of hope, right? Because, they don't care that it's cold and that snow is coming. They're singing just because they know the days are getting longer and spring is on the horizon.
They're saying, hang in there.
The distant, distant horizon.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Marilyn writes, a few weeks ago, I looked out the window at the bird feeders and saw something weird on a tube feeder, the kind with the perching post at the base. I looked through binoculars and it was a red-breasted nuthatch draped upside down across the perch, head hanging back. Thinking it was dead, I grabbed some gloves and my phone to take a photo, but when I got to the yard, it was sitting upright on the perch. I figured it might have been hit by a car or a hawk, stunned, and just happened to land on the post. But a friend wondered if they ever play dead, so just wanted to check.
Yeah, it probably saw a hawk. I mean, that's a very normal position for a red-breasted nuthatch. If you watch them, it's one of the reasons they're one of my favorite local birds. They'll hang in every crazy position, and it allows them some kind of foraging, plasticity. That's a little technical. So they can get into all kinds of crevices in all kinds of positions. But hanging upside down is very normal for a nuthatch. And what was probably happening was it saw a hawk. So those of you who watch your bird feeders regularly, you're probably aware of this phenomenon where all of a sudden the birds are all out there, but they're not doing anything anymore.
They freeze.
They all freeze.
I'm not here.
So you should be looking for where the Cooper's hawk is. It's probably a Cooper's hawk. It could be a sharp-shinned, but usually it's a Cooper's hawk. And the birds are all like, okay, you can't see me. Nothing here but us bird feeders.
I have my invisible cloak on.
Nothing here but us twigs. And then eventually they go back to moving around. So, that was probably a hawk scare.
Yeah. That's interesting to watch that, too, when all of a sudden they freeze. And then to watch the hawk come in, the way they, we have a lot of trees, and the way they just kind of glide. I don't even know how, they're just so graceful, the way they swoop in through those branches. And I was like, how do they manage to look so graceful as they're dodging all this stuff?
Oh, they're incredible. That's why I love the excipiters. And the excipiters are your Cooper's hawks and sharp-shinned hawk and goshawk, which we don't really see around here so much. But they're just built for speed in the woods. Mm-hmm. So not like falcons are birds of open country. They're our fastest birds, but they're out in the open, right? So they can get up to these huge speeds. But the Cooper's hawks and the sharp-shinned hawks are doing that in dense forest. So you think of the old Return of the Jedi scene where they're on those, whatever those things are called, and they're zipping through the woods and they're going up to the side and zipping through gaps, the 18-inch gaps in the trees or whatever. Well, that's real life every day for those birds. And the other cool thing they do is they kind of follow the contours of the landscape, trying to scare up a bird and then grab it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll fly low through backyards, and then they go zip up and over a fence and then back down to, you know, 2 feet off the ground, and they cruise along and then up and over a fence, up and over a bush.
Amazing.
And sometimes they'll just plunge right into a dense shrub, like a privet hedge or something like that. Just
and grab a bird.
And they'll come out the other side with a house sparrow.
Yeah, or, you know, amazing.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch.
So we talk a lot about Cooper's hawk versus sharp's shin hawk. So for folks who are trying to figure out which, the sharp shin's a little bit small, how do you tell the difference between the two?
They
look a lot alike.
They look a lot alike, and there's a so the difficult ones are the male Cooper's hawk versus a female sharp-shinned, because the females are bigger in these species, and so a male sharp-shinned is like the size of a blue jay, and they've flippy little wings, and they usually have a very squared-off tail with very right-angle corners on the tail. And then a big female Cooper's hawk is like, you know, a crow size with a long tail that's kind of generally rounded because the outer tail feathers are shorter than the middle ones. And so it gives it a rounded look, and it has a white tip to the tail that's kind of broader. The Cooper's hawk has a bigger head that sticks out, and the wing shape is different. I mean, there are people who spend their life trying to figure out how to tell the difference. And some of them that you see quickly, you just have to let them go.
Right.
Even an experienced birder, you just call it whatever, Cooper slash
sharp-shinned.
Whatever's
most common, yeah.
Well, no, you don't want to do that. That's sort of the tendency, and I'm sure there's a lot of misidentified ones out there. But, if you don't get a good look at it, you kind of have to let them go. And that's part of being an experienced birder, is knowing what you don't know. They're like young hotshots. They want to identify every occipiter. And, you know, some of us don't grow out of that. But you learn to let some of them go. And that's true with a lot of things, but especially occipiters, because they're tough.
On Nantucket, they have the Harrier hawks.
Northern Harrier.
Yeah. Now, do we have them anywhere else in the listening area, or is it just Nantucket?
The Mosh Hawk, if you're an old-timer. Northern Harrier is, they're around generally in the winter in open areas, big marshes, big open areas. But as a breeding bird, nesting-wise, they are on the state endangered species list.
Oh.
And so the only places they breed are, they're pretty common breeders, like in the moors of Nantucket. They breed on the vineyard. They breed in a few places on the Outer Cape, and that's really about it. I think they might breed up in the Parker River National Wildlife Refuge area, but very scarce as a breeding bird in Massachusetts. But you can find them pretty easily year round out on the islands.
Yeah, so out at Linda Loring Nature Foundation, you can see them out there quite a bit. Yeah,
any of the big open areas, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number for your bird comments, questions, or stories. We love bird stories. 866-999-4626. For that matter, we'll talk about any little critter you want to talk about.
Yeah, wildlife, plants, whatever.
Yeah. ThePoint@capeandislands.org. Amy writes, just a quick note to say I saw a pair of bluebirds at Peterson Farm in Falmouth yesterday. Do some of them overwinter here? Their coloration is so incredible.
Yes. Yeah, we're lucky on the Cape. It's they overwinter generally in Massachusetts, and they kind of move around in small groups, and they often hang out with things like goldfinches, house finches, robins, birds that like to eat fruit, and so they'll hang out in these mixed flocks. And I think the Cape is probably the easiest place to find bluebirds in the winter in Massachusetts. And so that's very normal. And the question always comes up: when do you clean out your boxes if you have bluebird boxes? And March is a good rule of thumb. They might start looking at things now. Like I had a couple of males behind my yard the other day that were countersinging. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were clearly, this was different behavior than, you know, 2 weeks previously. I mean, these males were singing, and they were, they didn't even notice that the rest of the flock had left. So they were thinking, they seemed to be territorial. And I usually get a pair somewhere in my neighborhood. I can never coax them to breed in the boxes I have in my yard. One of these days, maybe. But they do breed in my neighborhood. And so these might have been, you know, local males that never left. I think we have some number of our local birds just stick around. Some of them might go further south and then are replaced by birds from further north. They're not long-distance migrants, but they do move north to south in the winter.
So do they use the boxes in the wintertime? I mean, you say clean them out in March, but aren't there some kind of hanging out in there now or no?
Well, they're not nesting.
No, but
I mean, they might
there.
Roost in cavities during the night.
I'm just thinking of the bird boxes at the sanctuary, and sometimes, you know, you see them popping out of the boxes, and it's not, you know, it's wintertime, right?
So cavity, I don't know how often you'd see them popping out of them in the middle of winter. They might, but they're just, I've talked about this before, how cavity nesting birds, so you think chickadees, titmice, nuthatches, woodpeckers, and bluebirds, these birds are always in the real estate game. You know, they're always checking out the local cavities. They want to know, oh, is there an owl in this one? What's in this one? Is there a flying squirrel in this one? Or, you know, they're always looking for unoccupied real estate.
Gotcha.
You know, they're like when people come to the Cape and they pick up those little real estate things. You're like, what's around? Like they're not interested in buying a house right now. They just want to see.
It out. Okay.
And so these birds are the same way. And so I think they like to have a mental map of where there are cavities that they can spend the night in. They can think about nesting there 2-3 months from now. They just want to know what the cavity situation is around them. And so, yeah, you might see them poking their head into nest box in January, but they're not nesting.
Okay. Yeah. All right. A caller wants us to define accipiter.
Accipiter. A-C-C-I-P-I-T-E-R. It's just a... it's a group of hawks. It's those three species that I mentioned, and it's a genus. And so you have the northern goshawk, the Cooper's hawk, and the sharp-shinned hawk as large, medium, and small, respectively, hawks in this genus. And they're small, a range of sizes. A goshawk's pretty much the size of a red-tailed hawk, so they're pretty big. And then the Sharpie can be, like I said, the size of a blue jay. So they the full spectrum of kind of hawk sizes. But they're fast-flying woodland hawks that, especially for the smaller two, overwhelmingly prey on birds. Okay. Like overwhelmingly birds. And they that's why they're fast, because they're catching birds on the wing or pouncing on a mourning dove under your bird feeder or whatever, grabbing sparrows out of dense shrubs, that kind of thing. The goshawks are a little more. They'll eat like grouse. They eat a lot of. That's a big, heavy bird. Mm-hmm. So they're big, tough birds. But they'll also eat snowshoe hares, because they have a more northerly kind of distribution. The goshawks, and right. You can see goshawks all across Europe too. I remember seeing one in Berlin. So they're sort of all across the whole Arctic is what you would call that distribution.
Let's talk to David, who's calling us from Nantucket. Hi, David.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. How are you?
Sure, good. Go ahead.
Good. This is great. I love tuning into this in the morning. It really makes my day. It makes me late for work as well. But
it's a good excuse, right?
Just blame us.
I had a question about hawks on Nantucket. I'm seeing a lot, and I know you just talked about the Mosh hawks. And I see a lot of them, but I'm wondering if I always think I see red-tailed hawks out here. I'm never really sure, you know, which ones I'm seeing. I know the harriers, you know, which is the same as a marsh hawk, correct?
Yes, it's just they changed the name like 30 years ago or something like that, 40, yeah.
I see. And they fly kind of low. I understand the hearing is better than their eyesight, so they sort of fly low. I think I read. But I see a lot of hawks perched on the road on lampposts. And, I guess what I'm wondering is, what do we have out here for hawks aside from the marsh hawks? And are there red tails out here? Because I could swear I...
Yeah. I'd be surprised if there weren't. I'm trying to remember. If you're seeing them routinely perched on the side of the road, harriers don't perch all that much. I mean, they do. And you will see it more often on Nantucket because there's such a high density of them. But in general, your average birder's experience with harriers is that they just always seem to be flying. Mm-hmm. And it's because that's how they hunt. They don't perch hunt, really. Like a red tail just sits and, you know, you can see 20 red tails on a road trip if you're driving, you know, driving along the highways of Massachusetts. They just love sitting by the highway and they're looking for a vole to show itself or something, and they're just kind of checking out the small mammal activity. The harriers, they fly, and they are built for that. They have those kind of long wings, with the wings kind of angled up in a V, in a dihedral, and they just course over open areas, and they pounce on something when they see some kind of activity, whether it's a bird or mainly voles, small mammals like most hawks.
All right. David, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626. Tom is calling from Harwich. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, Red River Beach has harriers down there quite often. I see one down there.
Oh, good. Yeah, it makes sense. There's some marsh there, and they definitely like salt marshes, especially the bigger ones. Like the big marshes behind Sandy Neck and Barnstable, there might be a dozen harriers working them over the course of the day, sometimes more from some of the counts I've seen.
One of the ways to tell the difference between a Sharpshin and a Cooper's is by their call. They have that similar kind of jungle cack, 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 but the Sharpshin makes a scream now and again.
Mm. Huh. I haven't heard that so much. They have a different, like you said, it's a similar, like a woodpeckery sort of series of notes. The Cooper's hawks seem a little bit more vocal, but when I've been around breeding Sharpshins, and Sharpshins are very, so just to back up a little bit, just like a northern harrier, you know, harriers are around, you see them in the winter, but as a breeding bird, they're on the state endangered species list. The same is true of the Sharpshinned hawk. You know, they come through in migration, and they might see them at your bird feeder in the winter. They're kind of around. But in breeding season, as a breeding bird in Massachusetts, Sharpshin hawk is on the state endangered species list. They're not very common. Mm. And I've only seen a couple of nests, both of them in Wellfleet. And that's when you're more likely to hear them. I don't find Sharpshins to be all that vocal. I'm not sure I've heard the scream you're talking about, but... you know, they do different things, and young birds make different sounds. So it's probably in their repertoire. I just haven't heard it.
Yeah.
I got hours of footage of a nest I found in Dennisport in a white cedar swamp.
Oh.
And,
wow.
They put on quite a lot of aerobatics to scare you away and keep a good distance and use your zoom more than often, but.
Right. Yeah. If they're doing that, you need to back off. But and they do some cool aerial displays. So, you know, if it's usually Cooper's hawks that will be nesting. Cooper's hawks are more, they've made their peace with suburbia. And I think that's why they're not on the endangered species list. And Sharpshins are. Sharpshins like a little, you know, bigger patches of woods. But Cooper's hawks are fine with suburbia and the kind of patchy landscape we've created. And they've increased a ton over the last 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, Cooper's hawks have really, they're way more common than they were when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They're extremely territorial.
Yes. And so starting in like late winter, early spring, you might see them doing these funny display flights where they sort of flare out their white, fluffy undertail coverts, and they do this stiff-winged display flight. So this is something you can see, like, oh, I've got breeding Cooper's hawks in the neighborhood.
Yeah, nice people say it. Tom, thanks for calling and sharing with us. John writes, is it me or does it seem that the Canada geese have returned earlier than usual this year? I've seen a lot of them in the canal along with the eiders. Don't remember there being this much overlap before.
Returning.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't they?
I don't know. I don't even know how... The situation with Canada geese is a little confused. There's always been, historically, Canada geese were these wild migrants from the Arctic. And so it was just this sign of wildness in the fall. The Canada geese are arriving from the north because there were no breeding Canada geese. The golf course goose that we know now as the locally breeding Canada geese didn't exist previously. It's an artificial population that was created by releasing some birds they don't migrate, and they just are kind of resident, and then they form these flocks. So we do also get geese from further north. It's a little bit hard to track who's coming, who's going, and who are residents. And they will move around over the course of a winter. So I'm not sure how you would interpret you know, seeing geese on the canal all of a sudden.
With eiders, yeah.
With eiders, yeah. They'd be eating very different things, so it's interesting that they're hanging out with eiders.
All right, Dave says, I think I have a yard that may be suitable for a screech owl box, but I do have bluebird boxes, a bird feeder and such. Would a screech owl prey upon the daytime songbirds with any regularity?
Maybe. The songbirds don't like screech owls. That's something that we birders have learned to exploit, and if you can imitate a screech owl call, and it'll bring in all the local chickadees and titmice and nuthatches and things. They'll come in and scold at you.
Mm-hmm.
You owl, I'm scolding you.
Get out
of here. I don't like you. I think they certainly could. And so as screech owls, one of the reasons they're so common is they'll eat just about anything. I mean, they'll eat moths, you know, in the summer. They'll eat small birds. They, like most raptors, they're eating a lot of mice and voles. But they could. I wouldn't let that deter you from putting up an owl box. First of all, the chance of success is not super high, but you may luck out and get an owl, in which case I would think that would benefit or, you know, outweigh whatever, you know, juncos or song sparrows or whatever they might eat if they do in fact do that, but that's up to you.
Yeah. All right. So we have Eleanor sent this little picture here. I assume they were red tails surveying my cat. I could have been wrong. So she kind of has these aerial shots here of hard to say, maybe red tail.
Yeah, that's a red tail hawk. So it's just it's just kind of a high silhouetted hawk, but the classic red tail shape, broad wings, relatively short tail. One of the reasons you can tell an occipiter, because we keep talking. Coming back to that, is they have a long tail relative to the length of the wings. But yeah, that was a classic, the Buteo versus an occipiter. The Buteos are the soaring hawks, like red-tailed hawk, broad-winged hawk, red-shouldered hawk are around here now as well. And so they're kind of made for soaring, and they have relatively short tails and really broad wings. As for whether it was checking out your cat, I think that's a little bit of projection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just doing what hawks do, which is soar around over the landscape. I'm not sure they would bother your cat.
Maybe keep the cat indoors.
Definitely keep the cat indoors. Holy cow.
Yeah. I know. You know, as you know, Mark, I've not had my feeders up for a while because of the rats they attract. So I've really been focusing on what's in my yard for the birds. And it's a lively little spot. But I do notice that I get, I don't know, neighborhood cats. I'm not even sure whose cats they are, prowling in my gardens.
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, I know. It's like I chase them away, but you know they come back when I'm not looking.
Yeah, we have them on the sanctuary sometimes.
Oh,
and
how
it's
awful.
Hard to, you know, and we can't really have that. I think that's one of the reasons we don't have bobwhites on the sanctuary anymore, is I've watched one of these feral cats from a neighbor hunting one of the last bobwhites on the sanctuary.
Mm.
And, yeah, I mean, they're murder on ground nesting birds like that.
Yeah. Just to make a point for keeping the cat indoors, when I did have my cat, it was an indoor cat. They're not going to get hit by a car. You know, they're actually safer indoors than roaming around outside killing birds. And
right. Right. The coyote's not going to eat them if it's in your living room.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Simon is calling from somewhere on the Cranberry Highway. Hi, Simon.
How you doing, guys?
Okay, we're great.
Good. What's up?
Well, listen, I just want to let you guys know I happen to have the program on the radio, and as I was driving, serendipitously, a bald eagle swooped down and grabbed what looked like a tuft of nesting material and flew off.
Come on. Where is this?
It was on the Cranberry Highway. I do believe it was the WaterWiz parking lot that it swooped down and grabbed like a big wad of nesting material.
Wareham?
Yeah, Wareham.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
There have been a lot of bald eagle sightings, right, recently?
Right. I think we're going to get to that.
You can talk about it right now if you want.
Yeah, I'm not as sure about that area, but it's certainly possible. I mean, they're on the increase, and I would guess that there are 3 or 4 nests on the Cape right now. We just don't have good hard evidence of any of them. It's like implied nesting because we're seeing adults hanging around from now through the spring. And so that's something to keep an eye on. Is that an area you're in regularly?
Yes, it is. And I've never seen anything like that in all my life on the Cape at all. And then to see it on Cranberry Highway of all places.
Right.
And so
this was like a classic adult bald eagle, white head, white tail?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I was skeptical. I've seen people think an osprey was a bald eagle. I'm going, no.
Yes, but yeah, that, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened.
Real close.
A lot of people think red-tailed hawks are bald eagles. They get closer to one than they've ever been, and it looks really big to them, and they're like, oh, it's an eagle. Yeah. Like, no, it's a red-tailed hawk. But, an adult carrying nesting material, if anybody sees this, let me know.
Yeah.
And take note of which way it flies afterwards. We might be able to figure something out. But I'm just dying to find that real nest.
Yeah.
Supposedly there was one on Sheep Pond last year. It was just a kind of an obscure pond in Brewster. Back in the woods. And there's certainly a ton of eagle activity in that area right now. Long Pond in Harwich, it's on the Harwich-Brewster line. And that pond has like six, seven eagles hanging around.
Mm, somebody's nesting.
More, actually. David Clapp just told me that eight different eagles minimum have been using Long Pond. Two adults and at least four young ones. The young ones are mostly brown. It takes them like 5 years to get that classic adult bald eagle plumage. Mm-hmm. And then another pair of adults apparently visiting. So there might be two nests in the kind of Brewster Harwich area. And we don't know exactly where they are. Yeah.
All right, Simon, thanks for sharing that. Thanks for calling. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Mark, you said there's been some other bald eagle sightings besides in Harwich?
Yeah. There are always a lot of sightings in the winter. And from the canal to Provincetown, you can see a bald eagle on Cape Cod in the winter, and then young ones in kind of spring and into summer. That's always been the classic pattern. But now there have just been so many signs that they're probably nesting, like pairs hanging around consistently at the same pond, which didn't used to be the case. They would just sort of, you'd see a few in the winter and then they'd be gone. But now places like Mashpee Wakeby Pond, Long Pond in Harwich, it's like a complex of ponds there, the Punkhorn in Brewster, you know, and there might be others too. Mm. And so, you know, I really think that there's probably three nests out there somewhere, maybe more.
Tough to find.
Because
they're kind of, they don't really see them like, they're up high.
And they'd be, right. It's amazing for the size of that nest.
They're big.
Think of what an osprey, everyone knows what an osprey nest looks like because they're everywhere here. Think of that, but way bigger, you know? And that's what we can't find. come on, bird people. What do you you can't find a 3,000-pound nest.
Yeah, so they're hidden pretty well.
Yeah, they're not going to nest on a cell phone tower or a telephone pole. It's going to be in a big white pine somewhere on a relatively quiet shoreline of a big pond in a cove or something where you might not be able to see it, or an island in a big pond.
And honestly, if you're that's your backyard and you're looking up and seeing that, are you going to tell everybody there's an, you know, you're not.
Right, and I'd be okay with somebody keeping it quiet, but just tell me. I'm not going to tell, and who would I tell? No one listens to me.
Let's talk to Peter, who's calling from Marion. Hi, Peter.
I wanted to follow up on the Cranberry Highway eagle sighting.
Sure.
What do you got?
Yeah. I live in Marion, and I go across the Wewiantic River regularly. And last year, and again this year, just last Saturday, a week ago, and Monday and Tuesday last week, I saw a pair of eagles on the Wewiantic River. So, and pretty sure it was a male and female because one was bigger than the other.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually had an eagle in a tree in our yard and across the street last year. So there are eagles in the area. And you may have known that last year there were eagles on the Cushnet River, actually New Bedford Harbor.
In the winter or suspected of nesting?
In the winter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the tough thing because they nest in the winter. So I say that, but then it's like, well, I mean, February is when they're going to be laying eggs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the the trick is, are they there consistently? Are they there in March? Are they there in April? Are they there in May?
Yeah, well, that's, we did have them last year in the spring also.
Okay. Yeah, so, it's tough because, like, our eagles would be nesting earlier, and if we have bald eagles that are, say, from northern Maine or Canada who are down here for the winter, so they could just be kind of hanging around right now because they're not going to be nesting up north yet. And so that can confuse things because we will have these migratory adults around. I'll be like, oh, an adult bald eagle, so they must be nesting. But we probably have some wandering birds around as well. We really need to find that actual nest that they're incubating and, you know, they're producing chicks. I mean, that's what I want to see.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Verity, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Before we go back to the phones, a couple of interesting rare visitors to Falmouth.
Oh, I'm sorry. I started watching YouTube videos, so I was hoping you could just finish off the show here. You know how how it gets. You start watching one, and then all of a sudden an hour has gone by.
Yeah.
Okay. I was researching hawks taking cats. Right, rare visitors in Falmouth. So there have been a couple of very nice birds in this area. I mean, Falmouth is known as a great place to bird in winter, especially for ducks. There's some great ponds around here that are well known for having, like, big flocks of scop, greater and lesser scop, like, you know, Salt Pond and some of the other ponds, Sitter's Pond right in town. But lately, there were a couple of pretty rare birds that had a lot of people coming into the area to, well, one of the birds, anyway. The other one is secret. So let's start with the Pacific loon. And so the Pacific loon, right in the name, I think you could probably tell that that's not our typical loon. So people know common loons, and if they pay attention, they know red-throated loons. Both of them are common here in migration and into the winter. But there's also a Pacific loon that, pretty much every winter, there's one, two, three of them hanging around Race Point in Provincetown. But you have to work to see those birds. You have to drive out on the beach or walk out on the beach a couple of miles out to the rip, out by Race Point Light, to get a good chance of seeing those birds. They tend to be on the open ocean. but a couple of weeks ago, one showed up on Salt Pond in Falmouth. So people were able to get, you know, this nice, calm little salt pond. You're able to get easy, close looks at a Pacific loon, which was pretty rare. So that was fun. Then this other bird is secret, and I don't even know where it is. And it's a very special warbler called the Townsend's Warbler. And there's something like 10 previous records for the Cape and Islands. But it's a western bird. It's a bird that nests mainly in the Pacific Northwest, like coastal rainforests. When I used to work out in those rainforests, I would see them and hear them breeding there, up into the coastal rainforests of Alaska. And they winter right along the coast from, like, Vancouver down to, you know, California, and also in the mountains of Mexico. So what is it doing in Woods Hole? So there's one in Woods Hole, and somebody posted this picture to the Facebook, the Cape Cod Birders Facebook group. What is this bird? It was like, holy, it's a Townsend's, you know, where is it? And they couldn't reveal it because it was, they were posting on behalf of a friend, and the friend is renting, and it's somewhere in Woods Hole where they're renting an apartment and there's a business, so they can't have tons of birders, or I don't know what the issues are.
But keep your eyes open because it may move around.
You never know. I mean, it's just a normal yard with feeders and some Japanese Andromeda shrubs like everyone has. And it was there up in, at least through last week. I haven't checked recently with the person who was reporting it. But again, I don't know where it is.
So don't twist your arm.
Even the real stalker people I know, like Peter Trimble, he always knows where this stuff
is. He didn't know either?
He was asking me, so I knew that he didn't know where it was.
Maybe it'll show up in somebody else's yard that doesn't mind the traffic.
Nobody's figured it out, and that's fine.
Yeah.
So this is the thing. We don't need to know about every rare bird. Like,
Let's get it documented with a photo.
Let me know when it arrived and when it left. We'll get it into the record books, but not every birder needs to see every bird.
All right, let's talk to Lenny, who's calling from Mashpee. Hi, Lenny.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a quick question about robins. About a week ago, We have a feeder on our deck on the corner, and we kind of live, the woods are right there behind us. We're kind of in the woods. And about a week ago, I looked out through the slider windows there where I look, watch the robins or whatever. There must have been over 15 robins, because I have one of those heated water dishes, you know, on the rail. It must have been 15 robins all around the feeder, and they were drinking the water.
Yep.
And, I mean, these were, like, real fat. You couldn't even see their feet. I mean, they were, like...
well, that sounds kind of judgy.
Dragging, you know? And they all seemed to be males, and they were... And they kept coming back, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right,
it's the water, probably.
Got it. So yeah, that's something that, especially if you have a heated bird bath, you will see, you get these crowds. It's like a spa, you know, like a bathhouse. And I've had that happen with bluebirds. It often happens with robins, especially, you know, if it's been cold enough that the fresh water, they can't get fresh water that easily. Then they'll descend upon your heated bird bath, and yeah, these robins are around, and they don't visit bird feeders. So a good way to get birds like robins, cedar waxwings, bluebirds to come to your yard and hang out on your deck is to have a heated bird bath, because they may not all eat bird seed, but they all need water.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Paul calling from Dennis. Hi, Paul.
Someone mentioned about, I saw in a paper a year ago or more about,
He sounds a lot like the previous guy.
All right, Paul, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Good morning. I had an incident at the Dennis Pines Golf Course several years ago. My wife and I were walking up one of the fairways, and what I believe to be a red-tailed hawk came out of a tree out in front of us, swooped down probably 200 feet in front of us. It started screeching, and it came just over our heads. And believe me, both of us went to the ground because this looked fierce. Is this something that is totally abnormal, or
what time of year did you say this was?
Summertime.
Yeah, I mean, there might have been a nest. Any time a hawk is strafing you like that, there's a good chance that there's a nest nearby. They'll all do it. I mean, some hawks are more famous for it than others. Sometimes broadwing hawks, which are usually pretty shy and retiring and mild, in places where they're more common, they will attack people. Goshawks are famous for that, but they don't really nest around here. But yeah, any bird can be territorial. I mean, think of birds that attack an outdoor cat when it's nesting season. So I don't think they're gonna hurt you. But there have been a number of instances where hawks do get a little bit too protective and do start actually hitting people and, you know.
Well, Jenny just wrote, a hawk tried to grab my dad's fur cap.
Fur cap. Good. Well, that's like trolling for hawks, wearing a fur hat.
Well, speaking of that, Eleanor had, thanks for the call, Paul. Eleanor had wrote back, she said, 3 red tails circled yesterday only a few minutes after our indoor cat, a svelte 6-pound Siamese, snuck out a slightly open door as I was photographing a nuthatch. My question is, what could a red tail possibly capture and lift off with? I was on hyper alert, and since this cat never is outdoors, she was blissfully unaware of any possible danger. Was I overreacting? They can pick up a cat, can't they?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was doing on YouTube. And there's, you have to be careful. There's doctored footage, and sometimes there's a very obviously goofy doctored footage. But there are nest cam videos of eagles bringing cats back to their chicks. Certainly an eagle could. It's not very common. Mm. I mean, your cat is at much more risk from coyotes dogs, other cats, cars.
But good to be safe and keep the cat indoors.
That's why you keep the cat indoors. A hawk's the least of your worries if you have an outdoor cat.
All right. Charles says, hi, I saw a catbird in my hedge recently. I didn't think they were around this time of year. Is that usual or common?
So that's one of the nice things about the Cape is that it's sort of a little bit warmer on average. The coastal southeastern Mass is a little bit, it's warmer than the interior on average in the winter. And we also have a lot of these really nice thickets full of persistent fruits. And a lot of those fruits are invasive species like multiflora rose and bittersweet, but the birds don't care. It's just food. Mm. They're not evaluating whether something is native or non-native. They're just trying to survive the winter. And some very small percentage of catbirds don't go to Central America for some reason, and they'll make a go of it in a Cape Cod thicket. And there are, I don't know, hundreds.
So it's possible you can see them this time of year.
You can see them, especially if you go looking for them. If you know the kind of thickets they like, especially if this thicket has a little bit of water in it and it's shrubby and there's some fruit in there, some vines with fruit on them, there's a good chance there might be a catbird in there, definitely a hermit thrush, occasionally a towhee. So some of these things that we don't think of as wintering here, you can find if you look.
All right. Molly says, a neighbor found a perfectly intact, fresh but dead red-tailed hawk in their backyard. Is there anything we can or should do with the specimen?
So we have permits to take those, but honestly, our freezers are like chock full. I can't get anybody to take our specimens.
Mm.
So I've communicated to museums like the Harvard MCZ, Museum of Comparative Zoology. Someone from UMass has come to take things for their collection on occasion, but it's pretty rare. And so we end up with some of these big things like a fisher, mm-hmm. an otter, red-tailed hawks, great horned owls. And we are, like I said, we're licensed to keep those specimens. But taxidermy is expensive, and we don't really have much we can do with them. So lately I've been saying no.
All right, good to know. Lois says, 3 days ago, a male bald eagle came screaming across the backyard while my dog was out. By the time I got down to get the dog inside, the eagle had circled and then flew off. A huge wingspan. The next day, I spotted an American kestrel perched on my fence. Very pretty. I was wondering why I didn't hear any birds or see them or squirrels for 2 days. This occurred near Great Pond in East Falmouth. Yeah, that'll scare the little birds and squirrels away, won't it?
If this was recent, that's a kestrel in winter is like Sasquatch anymore. I mean, they have declined so much. They're very, very difficult to find in the winter, and they've almost disappeared as a breeding bird away from places like the military base and Crane Wildlife Management Area. They're still breeding there, but boy, a kestrel is really hard to find anymore, especially in the winter. But geez, people are really worried about their pets.
Mm. Well, yeah.
Eagles attacking. It's like infinitesimally small chance of that happening.
Bigger than a red-tailed hawk. But
Yeah, right.
And then just real quickly, we had a couple of photos sent to us from Henry on the vineyard. The one in the tree. This picture.
This is always
right
tough radio. Everybody see these?
Yeah, right.
Yep,
Maybe we can put them on website. But it's what?
So two photos. One is a beautiful adult sharp-chinned hawk. It demonstrates some of the ways you can tell them from a Cooper's hawk, some subtle things like an adult sharp-chinned hawk, the dark cap continues down the nape of the neck. And also they have kind of a small roundish head with a big eye. Cooper's hawks tend to have a dark cap that just on the top of the head. And then the other picture was a cool picture of a great crested flycatcher poking out of a nesting cavity, sort of the forgotten cavity nester.
Yeah.
It's a common bird on the Cape and Islands, and they nest in tree cavities, old woodpecker holes, beautiful flycatcher with a yellow belly. They're noisy. They have a lot of personality.
And I just sent both pictures to Jenny so she can put them up on our website if folks want to take
a look at them.
Yeah. We didn't have time to talk about why we feed the birds and should we, so we'll save that for the next show.
Good. Lots of calls. That was great.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on. And Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, joins us the second Tuesday of every month. Thank you, Mark.
All right. See you in April.
All right. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.